Well, I've got 11 o'clock. Why don't we go ahead and get started? How's everyone this morning? Good? Was the keynote good? Yes? All right. What a nice crowd. I'm so glad you guys could all find me up here. I was a little worried I'd be all alone up in the corner. Well, welcome to everyone. I know we only have an hour for these sessions, so we have a lot that we need to try to fit in a shorter period of time. And for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be here talking about developing applications for SharePoint with what we'll call modern web development. And to me, what that means, modern web development, is that means client-side development techniques. My name is Scott Hillier. This is my contact information right here, my email address and my Twitter handle. Feel free to use those if you want to follow up with me after the session. You have some questions or things that didn't get answered, that type of thing. Just real quickly before we dig into any of the technical details, if I haven't had a chance to meet you before, again, my name is Scott Hillier. I'm an MVP. I was a SharePoint MVP for 9 years, and this past January I got migrated to the cloud, and I'm now an Office 365 MVP. As an interesting side note, they're making changes again to the MVP program that'll take us away from product-based MVP designations and more into functional-based MVP designations. I expect in January that I will be called an Office Development MVP. But I have my own company, but people find me under lots of different brands, so you may have run into me under the IT Unity brand. If you haven't been to itunity.com, I encourage you to go there. I do all my writing on that site, and a lot of the content that we do today, you'll find in articles up there as well. I spend about 25% of my time doing stand-up training in front of classes. I do most of that under the Critical Path training brand. You'll also find a lot of my video content up on the Microsoft Virtual Academy Channel 9 and Plural site. I'm also an author or co-author of over 20 books, but I pretty much think at this point I should stop saying that. Anybody in here buy a technical book in the last year? Oh, there's one or two that are willing to admit it, right? So it used to be a big deal. Wow, 20 books. Now it makes me feel old when I say that. Okay, so here's the agenda that we're going to follow for our hour together. The idea behind what we're doing here is I want to lay out for you the different ways that you can develop in SharePoint and then direct you to what I think is the most forward-looking way to develop in SharePoint, the place where I would spend my time. So on our agenda, we're going to talk about the various ways we can do that through this development architectures and frameworks discussion we'll have in the beginning. And then I'm going to focus like a laser on the Angular framework, and we're going to talk about using the Angular framework to develop against SharePoint. And then we're going to look at a very specific implementation of developing against SharePoint that uses registration in Azure Active Directory and something called implicit OAuth flow. Before I dig into this in any great detail, quick show of hands, how many folks in here would consider themselves to be a traditional SharePoint developer? I did server-side development. I wrote features. Who's in that crowd? A few. Okay. How many consider themselves to be web developers? I use a lot of JavaScript frameworks, that type of thing. Okay. More of those. Great. All right. That's interesting. What we're seeing in the SharePoint community is sort of a pulling together of those two groups. So traditional SharePoint developers that did server-side development were pulling towards more web and cloud-based techniques, and developers that have traditionally done web and cloud-based techniques trying to show them the value of including Office 365 and SharePoint in the things that they create. Okay, so first up, let's talk a little bit about ways we can develop against SharePoint, our patterns and frameworks for use there. And when it comes to ways that we can develop against SharePoint, there's really two major buckets that we can use. We can create a SharePoint add-in, or we can create what we call an Office 365 application. The difference between those two things is that the SharePoint add-in really lives inside of SharePoint, so the expectation is that the end user has logged into SharePoint and they're going to run the add-in from within SharePoint. If it needs application registration, that registration happens within SharePoint, so you register your application with SharePoint. On the other hand, the Office 365 application runs outside of SharePoint. There's no expectation that the user launching that application has actually logged into SharePoint. The registration of the application happens with Azure Active Directory as opposed to SharePoint, and then we can go through a user authentication and application authentication process when we go that route. Digging in a little bit deeper, we'll start first with the SharePoint add-ins. And so the simplest thing we could create to work against SharePoint, to write our own application against SharePoint, would be a SharePoint-hosted add-in. The architecture of a SharePoint-hosted add-in uses a SharePoint site as the host for the application, so there's no additional infrastructure required. And so you can see my big box that has SharePoint in there. And then inside of that, we talk about two key terms. We talk about the host web and the app web. The host web is the SharePoint site that you are on when you install the add-in. And the app web is the SharePoint site that is acting as the infrastructure for the application that you create. In this model, basically all you're doing is taking an entire SharePoint site and making that your application. And that's really easy because you don't have any additional infrastructure. And the security is really simple because the person is already logged into SharePoint and the application is already running in the SharePoint context. So the security is known as internal security. And really, there's very little there. There's a high level of trust between your application and SharePoint. So that's probably the easiest of all the ones to create. Sticking with the add-in approach, we can also create what's called a provider-hosted add-in. And a provider-hosted add-in, we're often concerned about whether we create those on-premises or in the cloud, so they look a little bit differently. Quick show of hands. How many are primarily still SharePoint on-premises? Looks like maybe 40%. And how many are completely Office 365? Just a few. And everybody else is the hybrid version, so we have some Office 365 and some on-premises, right? So who's got that? Some Office, yeah, okay, good. Looks about right. So still a lot of on-premises, which means that as you're making that transition, this transition is ongoing and it's going to take really years to accomplish, you might find yourself doing some of this development on-premises. So the model is slightly different on-premises than it is in the cloud for creating a provider-hosted app. The SharePoint-hosted app will work in both on-premises and the cloud. The difference between the SharePoint-hosted and provider-hosted is that a provider-hosted needs to provide its own infrastructure. So here in the on-premises implementation, we might have an application running in IIS. That application could be ASP.NET Web Forms, ASP.NET MVC. It could be a lot of other technologies as well. But still, we expect the end user to log into SharePoint where the application gets launched from the host web and then takes them over to the other infrastructure. Depending upon the vagaries of how you code this and what you're trying to accomplish, you may or may not have an app web in your provider-hosted add-in, but you certainly will have this additional infrastructure under, say, IIS. And of course, that application being written in ASP.NET Web Forms or MVC could certainly talk to databases or other web services that you have. If you take that model to the cloud, then, you could have this provider-hosted add-in in the cloud. So what changes? What changes is the infrastructure changes. So instead of rolling my own infrastructure and having an IIS server to host my application, I could just host it in Azure websites. So I have an Azure website. I could still use ASP.NET Web Forms. I could still use ASP.NET MVC. I can still use JavaScript, CSS, HTML. All those things are still possible. Now in SharePoint Online, I have the host web, which is the SharePoint site where the application is installed and launched for. And again, I may or may not have an app web, depending upon how it's all put together inside of SharePoint. But my application, again, because it's now ASP.NET Web Forms or MVC running in separate infrastructure, it's free to do whatever it wants. So it could talk to SQL Azure, for example. It could talk to other web services, the kind of things that you would find in the Azure data market. So the model is very similar to on-premises, it's just that we're using different pieces. So what I think is important to take away as you're trying to think through various options is both the SharePoint-hosted and provider-hosted expect that the user has logged into SharePoint and then will run the application. So we know who the user is, then they launch the application. If we have an Office 365 application, on the other hand, there's no expectation that the user has logged into the application. This is an entirely cloud-based approach that we have here. So we'll have our ASP.NET Web Forms, ASP.NET MVC running inside of an Azure website. It can, of course, talk to SQL Azure, talk to the Azure Data Market. But what's interesting about this model now is that you can see that this model treats SharePoint as it treats any other data store. So we can get back into SharePoint using its RESTful API, talk to its REST services, just the same way that we might talk to REST services that we discover from the Azure data market. So it treats SharePoint almost as a data store, as a source that it wants to talk to, as opposed to an experience where the user is inside of SharePoint and they've launched from within SharePoint. And what I think is important, just conceptually to take away before we start getting into, you know, deeper tech on this, is that this is sort of, this is an evolution that SharePoint is going through. In SharePoint's heyday, if we rewind 7 years and think about how people were using SharePoint, SharePoint was the center of everything. And if I was standing in front of you teaching it, we would say things like it's a development platform. And Microsoft would have said things like you should build your applications in SharePoint. So it was the center of everything. But now as we move to the cloud, what SharePoint is SharePoint is one product of many products in Office 365. So things that used to be globally centric inside of SharePoint, it now makes sense to move those up and out of SharePoint to the larger suite level and to begin to treat SharePoint as a store of information, as a store of documents, as a store of list items, that type of thing. And this is really where everything is sort of going towards, this idea of using SharePoint that way. And in the larger sense, right, if you follow what's going on in Office 365 and the REST APIs, Microsoft is providing us REST APIs that go against really all of their products. So I'm going to be able to use this model not just with SharePoint, but with OneDrive, OneNote, Yammer, you name it. As things go on and on, we're going to get more and more RESTful APIs. So, you know, that's a quick look at all the different things we can do, but this shows my bias towards getting you to think much more about SharePoint as a data store and much less as the center of the universe where people go. As we move along, people are going to increasingly go to Office 365. They're going to use your applications as a way to unify the data that's found across Office 365 applications. Okay, so now, if this is the place that we're trying to get to, then the next thing that happens is what's the technology that we're going to use to start to build these applications? And everybody knows that Microsoft has been moving SharePoint developers away from server-side code into client-based code. And for the most part, what that means is we write JavaScript, right? So I've written more JavaScript in the last couple of years than I've written in my entire life. And now we're writing JavaScript applications that are intended to be used by thousands, tens of thousands of people. And so we can't just write it the way we used to do in SharePoint, right? So us old SharePoint developers only knew enough JavaScript to sort of glue stuff together and, you know, make things change on the screen when we want it to change. But now we're in a world where we really need to be able to create larger enterprise applications out of JavaScript. And that means using a framework. So there are lots of JavaScript frameworks that you can use. Five or six of them will be created while I'm in here speaking, right? And you'll go out and find out that there are more new ones. But if you look at the usage of JavaScript frameworks, you'll see that there's a clear winner at the moment, and that's really the Angular framework. So as you move into creating Office 365 applications, it makes sense to pull your tools together, and the tool set that I'm recommending to you is the Angular framework. So how many folks in here have written an application in Angular? Anybody? A few. Okay, good. So some people will need some intro here. That's great. So what is it about Angular that we care about? Why should we be in here spending some time learning about it? Well, Angular is a JavaScript framework designed to create single-page applications, or SPAs. Single-page applications allow you to land on one page, stay on that page. The views on that page will change as you use it, so it kind of feels like you're moving between different pages, but you stay on a single page and bring information into the page as the page changes dynamically. So it's an excellent user experience, but for the developer, Angular is a real JavaScript framework that, when I work in it, I just find it to be incredibly elegant and well thought out. It's actually quite a pleasure to write code in the Angular framework. It's it has a very strong separation of concerns, so it's easy to take a piece of your application and give it to a certain members on the team and have them build services for you, then to take those services and consume those services without concern for the code inside of them, good interfaces between all the parts. So if you're trying to move, you know, from that old SharePoint world into client-side stuff, you can't do a lot better than using Angular. A little bit more on single-page applications here. Again, I said the idea behind a single-page application is that you land on a certain page. So in this case, we see an example of just a simple contacts application. So we might land on a page called contacts.html, but as we need to do different things to the contacts, perform CRUD operations, view them, add new ones, edit them, then what we'll do is swap in HTML views. So we maybe have a grid that appears in the page that shows the list of contacts. Maybe we have a form that allows us to do a new contact or an edit. And maybe we have another page that shows us the details of a particular contact. So all the behavior that you would expect, but staying on that single page and swapping views in. Now, as I said, this is an excellent experience for end users. And in fact, we're all kind of used to this now, right? When you go purchase something on the web, you're not getting that blink, blink, post-back behavior anymore, right? Things just spin on the page and appear when they're ready. And that's exactly the type of experience people would have with an Angular application. One of the things, though, that when you're using a single-page application, it looks to the end user like they're moving between pages, but the truth is they're staying on the same page. So you have some interesting problems. For example, what happens if they hit the back button? Right, so the back button would just go back to another page you would expect, but the end user sort of expects it to go back to the last view they saw. So this shows one of the, just a simple example, but one of the really elegant things that Angular does. Angular actually manages the browser history for you, so that as you're swapping in views, it builds the history in an expected way, and you can sort of see a little drop down of the history over there. So that if you were on a grid, for example, and you went page one, page two, page three, and then you hit the back button, you'd go page two, page one, and Angular manages all that for you. That's actually part of HTML5, but Angular uses HTML5 to manage that history for you. So my point is that the framework is very well thought out for what it is trying to do. The framework is built around a concept called Model View Controller, MVC. Model View Controller is actually incredibly old. It traces its history back to Smalltalk, so it was invented back in the 80s. And the idea behind Model View Controller is that you have a controller component that reads and writes to a back-end data store, takes that data, and binds it to some kind of object, and that object transfers the data to the view, or in our case, the HTML page, where it's bound to the front end for display. How many folks in here have written an ASP.NET MVC application? Great, so you guys already know how this works, right? So in Microsoft's version of MVC, we have something called the view bag, right? And so what you do is you'll read and write some information, stuff it into the view bag, and then you send the view bag off to the front end where it gets bound for display. Angular follows exactly the same idea, but instead of something called the view bag, it uses an object called $scope. But basically what you do is read and write data, attach it to the $scope. The scope is then sent to the HTML page where it's bound. We could spend a week easily talking about Angular, but some of the key features here that you'll find inside of it is the idea of a module, which is the highest level container for your application. Just like Microsoft's MVC implementation, we use an injection approach where we take dependencies and inject them into controllers so that the controller is not bound to any specific dependency, and it sets you up very well for enterprise testing. Another key plus in Angular is it's built from the ground up to support test cases through the use of dependency injection. As I said, scope is used to create and maintain the view. It's basically the view bag. And then we can create what are called directives, which give us our UI elements, like lists and tables and dropdowns and things like that. And we can also create services which work across all the applications, so just generic services inside of Angular as well. This just shows you how all the pieces fit together. Again, the concept of a module in Angular is the highest level application, highest level container, rather, that you can create. Routing is the idea of having the multiple views and what a user types into the URL or buttons they click or links that they navigate on bring in these different views to the single page that you're on. That's all done through a definition of routing, which I'll show you in code here shortly. Down here, you can again see the relationship between the model, view, and controller. There's $scope in the middle. And again, directives are the HTML UI chunks that you create. I tell people you can kind of think of these like the things you drag out of the toolbox in Visual Studio, so you can make your own UI directives. And then the factory is used to create services that work across all different things in Angular. So if you need a generic thing like a notification service that pops up a little dialogue, you would create that with the factory. Some key pieces of code you need to understand before we show you any demos at all here. Let's just look at the module definition. So Angular, when you reference the Angular JavaScript libraries, the namespace for Angular is Angular, just like jQuery is jQuery or Knockout is KO. And Angular.module is used to create a new Angular application. This is the first line of code that you would create. You can see I've called mine my app. When we create new modules, we can also inject other people's modules. So you can create generic modules that are used to accomplish tasks. You'll see that when I start to define routes, I inject what's called the routing module into my application, which will allow me then to define routes. But you're always going to define your application, call it something. I've called it my app. And then within your HTML page, you're going to use a div tag like this, and you'll say data-ng-app equals my app, so the name of the app up there. What's going on inside of Angular is that Angular uses an approach that lots and lots of JavaScript frameworks use. In HTML5, you are allowed to define your own custom attributes for the HTML. And the browser is told that the HTML should be legal, right? It shouldn't flag it as illegal HTML, provided that the attribute begins with data dash. So you can do this yourself. If you were doing a jQuery application, for example, you could do data dash and some tag you were looking for, and then use jQuery to go find those. That's the kind of thing that JavaScript frameworks do. It lets it find pieces on the page so it can manipulate the DOM. So in our case, data-ng-app indicates the Angular app that should control the page, and then everything inside that div is now under control of my Angular app that I create. Controllers are really the workhorses inside of Angular. So once you're inside a module, then you can define other divs to be under the control of a controller. And just like Microsoft's MVC, the controller gets called as the result of some route navigation, and then the code inside the controller executes. So here we see an example where I've defined a controller using the controller method. I've named my controller welcome controller, and I'm injecting the scope dependency. Again, I saw lots of hands on MVC, so I'm going to lean on that. That's like having the view bag available in your controller. And then you can see that what I do is on the $scope object, I attach a property called welcome message and set its value equal to high. Inside my HTML, I can designate a piece of HTML that's under control of that controller by saying data-ng-controller. In this case, the name is welcome controller. And then I can display message from my scope using the mustache or handlebar syntax. So in this case, it's just going to take the high and show it inside of the div. So controllers, as I said, are the workhorses. You're going to end up writing a lot of controllers for these applications. And then you'll often need functionality that cuts across many controllers. So generic functionality can be created by creating services. And the way that services work is you use the factory method. So I'm using the factory to create a service called welcome service. And all a service really is a JavaScript object that you can attach functions to. In this case, I've attached the greet function to it and returned the object. And then if you look at the controller down here where it says myapp.controller, sure, I'm injecting scope like I was before, but now I can inject the welcome service, my custom service, and then I can just call welcome service.greet, which is, in this case, as you can see, going to pop the alert high. So these are the basic building blocks that allow you to control the single page, to control what's displayed on the page, and then to provide services that span all the different components. And again, one thing I hope you see, if you're not familiar with the Angular framework at all, one thing I hope you see is how compartmentalized this is. So I want you to leave with the idea that this JavaScript framework has a good chance of allowing me to be able to dole out work to my teams, to be able to organize work, to create reusable services that I can create across a lot of different applications, all the types of things that professional developers expect in the development process, and basically taking what frankly is a pretty bad language in JavaScript and turning it into something that we can use for enterprise development. That's really the key thing. Okay, so let's take a look then at a SharePoint-hosted app that uses Angular. All right, I'm in my Office 365 tenancy. Everything I do for you is going to be in this Office 365 tenancy, and I have a SharePoint-hosted app. So the first thing I'm going to show you is a SharePoint-hosted app that's called Substitute Manager. Now, this uses something that is super familiar to us people from the States. I'll check with you guys and see how familiar it is with you. The idea behind this application is it allows you to find substitute teachers for school. So, you know, if a teacher wants to take some time off or they're sick, then we have a bunch of contractors basically that have said, I can fill in for that particular time. And so now we need to go find them. So the app helps me find them. But finding them is not simple because they have to match the need. So if you have, you know, young children that need a teacher, those requirements are going to be different than if you had teenagers who need a physics teacher, right? Makes sense? So that's what's going on here. So just to kind of breeze through this and show you basically how it works, we have a couple of different things. This is actually an interesting combination of Angular and some built-in SharePoint pieces. All of my data in here uses SharePoint lists. So for example, if I click on authorized users here, you'll see that I have a list of authorized users. This is just a regular SharePoint list that I'm talking to. And then we have this concept in the States of school districts, right? So all the schools are organized into various districts. These happen to be the districts from the state of New Jersey. And then within a school district, you could also have a school, right? So these are all the schools that are in that particular district. And that is the level at which you want to do the substitution. So then when we look at the list of substitutes, you know, these would be all the people who have volunteered to help us out. You can see we only have one. It's me, but it makes it easy, right? And then you can see up here, for example, just on my regular SharePoint list, it says, what's my home district? And you can see my school level is elementary, which is kids about 10 years age and younger, that type of thing. And my skills are, I'm a general subject matter expert. Well, with all of that basic information available in SharePoint lists, then what we can do is go to the Angular part of this application, which is the idea of creating requirements and then proposing substitutes. So if I click on the proposed substitute, you're now looking at an Angular application here. So if you look up at the top in the URL, you can see that I'm on default.aspx, and I'll never leave default.aspx. I'll just stay right here. And then what I can do is I can say, okay, here is a requirement that someone has for an elementary school teacher between September 21st and September 25th, which is already passed, but that's okay. And then we can come up here and say, let's go find people who are appropriate to assign to that. And then we'll do some business logic, and not surprisingly, we'll come up with my name right here. I'm stayed on default.aspx, right? No change there, and you can feel that experience of not having a post back in place. The application would continue at this point. If you give it the thumbs up, it'll send an email to the teacher, and then the teacher can say yes or no and come back into the application. You get the idea. I think the thing to take away here is that these can be incredibly easy to create as SharePoint-hosted apps. because there's not a lot of security concern here. I'm hosted inside of SharePoint. The users have already logged into SharePoint, and the Angular framework works quite well here. And as I've pointed out, you can also take advantage of built-in SharePoint pieces like lists and libraries as your data store, and you never really have to go very far to get that to work. Other things that we can do, here, let's do this while I'm here. It's always nice to have Zoom it going. So let's come back here. All right, so we've pointed out, right, that we're on default.aspx, and then we could come in here and say, okay, let's view the hours that Scott has worked. And you can see here that my view is now completely changed. Now I'm showing the different hours that I've worked throughout the year, but of course, I stay on default.aspx. And if I come over here to the back button now and I drop it down, you'll see that I'm on the hour report. But if I use this to go back to assignments, then see what it does. And that's all part of how the Angular framework works to help you create these applications. This is all done in JavaScript. There's not anything else going on here besides JavaScript. Okay. Let's take a look at how this was coded out. So the first thing I want to do is come here to the default.aspx page. So all I did to get started was go into Visual Studio and create a regular SharePoint hosted app. And then you'll notice that I've set my references. So here's my reference to Angular right there. And I've also set a reference to the Angular routing library, which is going to allow me to associate different views with navigation elements. And then if we scroll down, you can see my navigation system right there. And let's see, I want to point out this spot right here, data-ng-app. So what I've said is, and we'll see the code in a second, that there's an Angular application called Substitute App that's in control of this entire single page. And if I scroll down, there's an empty div right here where you see we have data-ng-view, and that's where my HTML views get swapped in and out. So basically what I've done is I've created a master page and then pages that are going to get substituted inside that Chrome. So we sort of have the JavaScript version of what you would do in ASP.NET web forms anyway. If you come over here to the solution side and we scroll down, I just want to show you for a second here how many JavaScript libraries I've created to make this app work. I think I can just about get them all on the screen here. There we go. Okay, so everything over here on the right represents custom JavaScript libraries that I've created. Now, when you first look at it, you go, wow, that's a lot. But what I really want you to take away from this is how compartmentalized they are. I could farm these out to various members of my team, and they can create things that we can roll back into the project to continue to build up the functionality of our application. I'm going to start, though, by coming to this particular one called app.js, which is the starting point for my application. Inside of here, you'll see that I've used the angular.module and created that substitute app, which is the one that's referenced in HTML. Before the application runs, Angular runs a config method, and the config method will allow you to perform some configurations of your applications. Now, in our case, the most important thing we care about is setting up what's called the routing. Now, I'm able to set up the routing because when I created my substitute app, I injected into my module the ng route module, which comes from the routing library that I showed you I referenced earlier. Then inside the routes, what's happening is we're associating some HTML, an HTML chunk, not a whole page, with an Angular controller. Again, for my MVC people, this should feel very familiar. You take a piece of functionality in a controller and you associate it with some HTML that gets generated. If we come back to the solution over here, you'll see that we have, let's just pick on the home page for a second. So here is the home page, which is just a chunk of HTML in a div tag here. Okay, that's all we've got. And there's also a home controller right here. So what happens when you launch the application and you navigate here, we have a home controller that's defined by the controller method. There's home controller. And then these are all the things that get injected in, not just the scope, but lots of services, the profile service for information about the person, school districts, the school itself, information about the substitute or the requirements. All of these services can be found down here under the services folder. And let's just look at the profile service for a second. Let's slow down and take a look at this. So in order to create a service that can be used across lots of different applications, I use the factory method. Here I've created a service called profile service, and I've injected into it the HTTP service. If you'll look down here where it says HTTP, URL, parameters, method, and headers, if you've done jQuery Ajax, that should look very familiar to you. What I'm doing here is making a call to the SharePoint RESTful API, and I'm simply asking for the properties of the current user from the user profile service. That's what that call does. But what I want you to see is that the factory neatly encapsulates that in a way that the caller, the consumer of that, somebody else who wants to use this, doesn't have to care about how that was implemented. So now, once I have a service like that, I can then go back to my controller and I can inject that service in. And then when it's injected in, I can come down and make a call to it, profile service me. And then when the value returns, I can get information out of it. And in this case, what I'm getting is your display name and your profile picture, which is why my picture and display name show up. But for you, in the short period of time that we have together to talk about this, I just want you to see that you can create those services and they can make your RESTful calls. And those RESTful calls can be to SharePoint, they can be to other Microsoft products, they could be to Amazon Web Services, eBay, anything that you call. And then those services now become available for Angular controllers to consume. And now you have a real pattern that you can use to create enterprise applications against really any Microsoft product. And you can use this on premises, and you can use this in the cloud, because we are doing a SharePoint hosted add-in, which means that this call that we make to SharePoint doesn't really have any tremendous security issues associated with it. I'm not in here attaching tokens or anything because I'm actually running inside of SharePoint. So this call is just simply going to go through at this point. Okay, so that's an example of a SharePoint hosted app using Angular. Okay, let's press on. Now, what we did was we built something inside of SharePoint. Now what I want to do is build something outside of SharePoint. In order to build something that's outside of SharePoint and uses SharePoint more like a service than like a development platform, we need a way to register our applications and give them access into SharePoint, and that's done using Azure Active Directory. Azure Active Directory is available to everyone that has an Office 365 tenancy. So if you have an Office 365 tenancy today, you have some kind of account that you use to log in to Office 365, that account is maintained inside of Azure Active Directory. So in order to see this, what you can do is you can get you can take an Azure subscription, you log into the Azure Subscription Manager, and then you can attach to the Azure Active Directory associated with your Office 365, and you'll see all the people in there. Now, when you make add-ins for SharePoint that run inside of SharePoint, you register those add-ins with SharePoint. That's the process that you use to get security. When you create something that runs outside of SharePoint, you register it with Azure Active Directory. And the key thing to understand about application development in the Office 365 space is that applications themselves are first-class principles. They have user IDs and passwords and rights. Except we call the user ID a client ID. We call the password a client secret. And then the rights are granted inside of Azure Active Directory. Azure Active Directory implements Open Authentication, or OAuth. This is the internet standard for securing calls into RESTful services. It's a token-based system. So what we're going to see is that the rights that we give our application will allow it to call into SharePoint or indeed other Microsoft products. And we'll also see, where it's appropriate, a consent dialog. So this infrastructure has the ability to pop a dialog that says, hey, this person would like to talk to your email or what have you. Is that okay? The key thing, I think, to understand about Azure Active Directory is that, you know, we're in here talking about SharePoint, and I'll show you how to call into SharePoint from the cloud. But this exact same pattern is used for every Microsoft product that is exposing a RESTful API or will expose a RESTful API in the future. So what I really want you to take away from, if you took nothing else away from what we're talking about here in this hour, I want you to understand this pattern I'm showing you, while it's one of many different patterns you could use to develop against SharePoint, is the most forward-looking pattern. This is the one that Microsoft is going to use to allow you to write applications against anything that exposes a REST API. And they're in the business of creating REST APIs faster than we can imagine, right? So this is where you should spend your time learning if you wanted to, you know, to learn something that's going to carry you forward. Okay, as I said, we need to register our applications in order to be able to get permissions. So I'll show you, walk through that for you here in just a second. In fact, let's just do it now. All right, so as I said, if you have an Office 365 tenancy, you can do what I'm doing right now as soon as you leave. And basically what you would do is you would log into an Azure subscription, and here in the Azure subscription, if I scroll down to the bottom, we'll see Azure Active Directory in the subscription. And then I have a couple of them in here, but what I've done is I've connected to my Office 365 subscription. And so in here, if I look at users, I can click on users, and it brings up the different users. Here are the users in my Office 365 tenancy. So, you know, if you do this with your organization, you're going to see all the people that can access Office 365 right here, just like you would expect from really any Active Directory installation, right? What's neat, though, is that you can also click on Applications, and here we see applications that are registered with Azure Active Directory, and this is where I said applications are first-class principles. They're just like people. They get registered in Active Directory, and they can get permissions. I'll take one of these, which I'm calling Adel Documents here, and we just click on it to see a little bit of what's going on, and click on Configure. And you can see it's got a name, just like any user would. That's great. But if we come down and we want to see its real login name, that's this guy right here, the client ID. So what happens is applications get usernames. Those usernames are globally unique identifiers, right? So it just looks like that. And then it can also have a password, and the password is what's called a client secret. You find it under the key section. You can see I've got one that's good for a year here, but it's, you know, it's blanked out so we can't actually see it. But basically what it is just a base 64 encoded string. So that base 64 encoded string is like your password, and it represents information that's going to get passed around in the tokens to give you permission. You can assign permissions to your applications down here at the bottom, where you can pick the application that you want to assign permission to, and then grant permissions. You can see here that for this particular application, I've selected to grant it access to SharePoint Online, and basically because this is a demo and I was goofing around with it, I've just checked everything here. But you can get the idea of what's available: read and write managed metadata, access items in a site collection, read a user's files, all the types of permissions that you would expect if you were making a SharePoint application. If we want to add other applications, we can click the Add Application, and you can see some of the other applications that are available. Now, I always like to pause here to make sure that I give you the appropriate gravity of the situation. In this demo, what I'm doing is I'm showing you some SharePoint stuff, right? But then there's this button I can click that says add rights to other applications, and then we have some applications listed here. So you can see Yammer, Power BI, the Unified API, stuff like that. But this list is going to grow and grow and grow until it includes every Microsoft product you would ever want to talk to. So what I'm showing you is the way that you're going to develop. And now what we're doing is we're transitioning really from being a SharePoint developer to being a Microsoft developer. This is what it's going to mean to be a Microsoft developer: registering applications in Azure Active Directory, getting permissions to talk to the exposed RESTful APIs, and then using ASP.NET Web Forms, ASP.NET MVC to create applications that consume information from all of those APIs. So that's why this pattern, in my mind, is the most forward-looking. It's the place where I would spend most of my time. Okay, so at this point, then, we have an application registered. And for us, the most critical part is really this client ID. Okay, let's press on here. So now that we've got a bunch of tools in our toolkit that we can use, we understand a little bit about how to use Angular. We understand how to register applications. Now, what we need now is a way to take the permissions that we've been granted in Active Directory and prove to SharePoint or Yammer or OneDrive that we're allowed to read a document or write an item or what have you. And so the way this is done is through open authentication. Now, there are many different flows in open authentication. I can't cover them all in one session. I could spend more than an hour talking about them. But we're going to talk about a very specific one known as implicit flow. When you write an application that is entirely JavaScript, you have some challenges. One of the challenges is that anything you put in a JavaScript variable is not secure. If you put something in a JavaScript variable, you may as well put it on a billboard on the highway because everybody can see it. You should assume everyone can see it. So the normal, very formal OAuth flow requires us to track and maintain the client secret, the application's password. But when we write applications that are entirely JavaScript, we can't do that because we cannot secure the client secret. It's not possible. So the specification defines a bit of a shortcut for us known as implicit flow. And what implicit flow says is it says that as a substitute for actually providing the password that was assigned to the application, we're going to accept the user's login as being a level of trust that says the user wants to use this application. The user has successfully logged into Azure Active Directory, so we're going to grant a token to the application. And we'll see how that works in a second. What Microsoft did to make this work for us is they recently introduced a library called ADLJS, ADL Active Directory Authentication Library for JavaScript. This library was specifically created for the Angular framework. Now you see why I'm teaching you Angular. So if you use the Angular framework and you want to write applications that are outside of SharePoint, then you need to implement implicit flow. Microsoft gave us the library to implement implicit flow in ADLJS. So what we're going to do now is add in ADLJS to our application so that we can finish creating the applications that run outside of SharePoint. This gives us a little idea of what implicit flow is here. This is sort of the text-based version of the discussion. Why don't we do this? Let's go to this guy right here and just talk about how implicit flow works. Now remember, we're creating Office 365 applications that run outside of SharePoint. This means that the end user that comes to our application has not yet been authenticated. So here we see the four main players in implicit OAuth flow: the end user who wants to use the application, the actual application itself that in our example here is running in an Azure website, we call it the client, the resource we want to talk to, in this case SharePoint, we call it the resource server, and then Azure Active Directory, which is going to broker the trust between these things. The entire purpose of open authentication is to allow an application that you do not trust to do something on your behalf without you giving up your password. So what you're about to witness is a person that doesn't trust an application. SharePoint doesn't trust that application, but that application needs to talk to SharePoint. Let's say it wants to go in and read a document. And the only way we can make it happen is to take a party we all trust, Azure Active Directory, and ask it to broker the trust for us. So what happens is the end user calls directly into the application. At this point, what will happen is we're going to load the Azure Active Directory authentication library JavaScript and initialize it. We'll see how that happens in code. And then what will happen is the user will immediately be redirected to Azure Active Directory to sign in. So when I run the demo for you, you'll see that you bounce immediately over, once you need to authenticate, to that big login screen that has, you know, about 75% is a pretty picture and the other part is where you log in. So we get bounced over to that. We may actually see a consent screen in some cases as well. And then the act of logging in is enough to tell Azure Active Directory that we trust the application that has requested that we log in. Azure Active Directory will then issue an access token to that application. Now what happens is that application listens for calls to the trusted resource, in this case SharePoint. When a call is made, ADL will intercept that call, take the token that was given by Azure Active Directory, and attach it to the call. Once that token is attached, the call can be made, it can be allowed to go through to SharePoint. There's a whole dance in there that involves cross-origin resource sharing because SharePoint is in a different domain than our application. So there's a core's pre-flight request that happens. And then SharePoint validates the token that was given to it and sends back the data, allows you to access a document, read a list item from a library, or whatever you're trying to do. The takeaway in the flow that you see here is that, again, as a substitute for being able to provide the key that was present in Azure and Active Directory, the key that we cannot defend in JavaScript, we're allowing the actual login of the user to act as a substitute for that, and then the rest of the flow goes through. Okay, let's take a look at an example of this in action. Let me go ahead and open the project for you here. Okay, great. I'm going to run this thing for you first, then we'll take a look at the code. So let's go ahead and fire it up here. All right, so the first thing I want you to notice is that I went directly to the application. So I didn't go through any kind of login. I haven't been in SharePoint. I'm just running the application. In fact, it knows that I'm not logged in. All right, so our idea is to treat SharePoint more like a data store, more like a service. So now when I come back here, and I'll just go back into my Office 365 tenancy here, and we'll go to the site contents, and what this sample is going to do is it's just going to read from this document library. Okay, so I'm going to show you how we're able to get permissions and then read something out. Okay, so you can see that we've got in here one Word document and three PowerPoints. So now let's come back to our actual application. Here it is. It says, welcome, you're not logged in. Well, I'm on the home page, not logged in. Now what's going to happen is I'm going to click on the documents. And at this point, I'm going to need authorization to go in and talk to SharePoint. So watch the flow. I go ahead and click on the document, and when I do, it immediately bounces me to the login for Azure Active Directory. So it's at this moment now that I'm actually logging into Azure Active Directory, and this is going to act as enough authorization to allow the application to proceed. So we're going to go ahead and do that. And then when I do, a token is going to be granted, and I'll get bounced back to the application, and then you can see it read the document library, and I think you'll see there's one Word document and three PowerPoints in there. Okay. So this is vastly different than what was going on with the add-in, right? Because I'm outside of SharePoint looking in. And again, if I haven't said it enough, if I haven't emphasized it enough, sure, we're doing it with SharePoint, but this could also be OneDrive, OneNote, Yammer, and the list will go on and on and on. So this is, to me, this is what Microsoft development looks like as we all go forward. Okay, let's look at some code then. This is an Angular application. So we already went through some of the basics in the first demonstration. So I'm just going to try to focus on what's different here. So if we go to the page, the common page here, this one, yep, that's what I want. You'll see that where I set my JavaScript references, I have set a reference to Adel. So that's what's new in this demo, is I now have that Active Directory authentication language for JavaScript, library for JavaScript enabled. If I go into the app, you'll see that I'm doing angular.module, and I've created an application called MyApp, just like we did before. But I'm also injecting the Adel Angular module, which is defined in that Adel library. That's why I can do this. In the config method, which will run before the application starts, I'm injecting the Adel authentication service provider, again, coming from that Adel library. And the big thing that happens is right here. So what I do is I call the init method, and in this init method, I configure the provider. I have told it the Office 365 tenancy that I want to use, shillier.onmicrosoft.com. The client ID is the ID from Azure Active Directory that's associated with this application. I can keep the client ID. I don't have to worry about that in JavaScript, but I can't have the client secret. That's the piece I can't defend. But I can know what application we're talking about. And then under the endpoint section, these are the endpoints that are to be secured. So you'll notice that I'm just looking at a site collection called Sites App Dev, and there's underscore API, which is, of course, the root of the SharePoint RESTful API. So basically what I'm saying is, if I talk to the SharePoint RESTful API at this site collection, then you need to go through the authentication process. You'll also notice that in the routing, we saw the routing earlier, but you'll also notice we've added a new thing to our routing definition, which is require AD login. One is set to false, one is set to true. Basically, if you go to the home page, I'm not making any calls, so that doesn't have to be a secure route, which is why when I ran the application for you, the first page said you're not logged in, because it didn't force the security route. But on the second one where I go to the documents, that is going to force me to go log in. That's why I'm logging in, because that thing says you hit this route, you go to this view of the document, that this view of the application, you need to log in. And at that point, Adel will begin listening for any RESTful calls on these endpoints. So then later, where we actually do the work, which is in the controller, the documents controller, you'll see that I'm making a call on that endpoint, and you'll notice that it's just a straightforward RESTful call to pull all the files out of that document library. That's it. And you'll also notice how simple this is. This is a very simple call. You don't even see anything that has to do with security there, right? Because Adel is listening for the call, And when I call on one of the configured endpoints, it intercepts the call and attaches the token to it for me. So I can actually write this application as if there were no security involved at all. It takes care of it all for me. So it makes it as easy to write this as it was to write the SharePoint hosted version that just used internal security and didn't care about tokens. Right? So that's the beauty of that whole setup. So that's really all that's new here in this, added to what we saw in the SharePoint hosted app. Okay, perfect. So let's talk a little bit about what we did here. So in summary, there are lots and lots of ways to develop against SharePoint, and indeed lots of Microsoft products. And we've spent maybe the last couple of years doing an awful lot of talking about add-ins, SharePoint-hosted add-ins and provider-hosted add-ins. But it's clear to me that as you watch Microsoft make more and more RESTful API interfaces available to us through Azure Active Directory, that the whole thing is kind of moving in this direction of registering with Azure Active Directory and calling various RESTful APIs across various products and integrating them together to create whole applications. If that's true, then we need a set of tools that help us develop in that world. Again, there are a lot of ones that you could choose from, but going with a JavaScript application, Angular, implicit flow with Adel.js gives you a complete set of tools that you can use to implement a single page application that allows end users to have a very satisfying experience with your application and allows you to break up an application in a way where you can give it to various teams, create reusable libraries of your own code, and basically be successful creating enterprise applications. Okay, I'm right at the top of the hour. I'll hang around if anybody has any follow-up questions. Other than that, thanks for the hour and enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you.